Hello and welcome to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. If you have a question about wills, trusts, or probate, if you're wondering how do I beat the high cost of long-term care, what the heck is long-term care anyway? Is long-term care, is that the nursing home? Is that, what if I'm providing care at home, at-home care? You know, are we talking assisted living, independent living? What is all this long-term care stuff? Well, give us a call. It's easy to do. 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. And we'll get your question, comment, or concern on the air. We also deal, of course, with real estate. Real estate market looks like it's fine. You know, we've had constant, report. Oh, it's bottoming out. It's bottoming out. Well, it looks like it's not only bottomed out, it looks like it's bouncing back a little bit. Inventory is extremely tight, and that's not just a local thing. I mean, it's extremely tight in many, many places, and the prices are really up off the floor. I was in probate court a couple of weeks ago. Judge used to understand, if you were selling for less than the SEV or what have you, but nowadays you better have an appraisal to prove that, that the prices really are that low. I'm getting kind of skeptical about any fees that any selling price on a piece of real estate that isn't well justified if it's anything less than that state equalized value, two times the state equalized value. So, all kinds of signs all around the place that the not that it's reinflating, by any stretch, and not that people have made back their losses, and still have an awful lot of folks upside down, underwater, and all the rest. But at the same time, we haven't been building, let's face it. It's not like we've been building houses for the last 4 or 5 years and very slow construction. And as a result, but people still want more houses. The population is still growing. And so, that's where we're at. We've got Stuart from Holland on the line. He made the 888-463-2843 call. What can I do for you, Stuart? How can I help?
Hi, David. Got a kind of an unfortunate situation. I have a relative who just recently came in line for an inheritance, fairly sizable inheritance.
Okay.
But just prior to the passage of the person who bequeathed the inheritance, is in a great deal of legal trouble, charged with some serious crimes. And if he doesn't win his case, I'm sure the restitution orders and various fees and fines and whatnot would either gobble up or seriously erode his inheritance. And I was wondering, is there some way that money can be put in a trust before any conviction comes down for their later benefit without being attachable by the government?
The short answer is no, not at this time. But you really put your finger on one of the things that drives me absolutely crazy, for lack of a stronger term. Drives me absolutely berserk, because most estate plan. Now, was the person who left the assets, did they have a trust or a will, or how did that work?
Well, that's one good aspect. It's in a sole benefit trust, which then, of course, I think went into, or possibly went into another trust that needs to be distributed then as the assets of their estate.
Okay.
To the beneficiaries.
All right.
And there is a clause in there. It's probably boilerplate, but it says the trustee has the power to withhold or not distribute to any potential beneficiary if there is marital discord, pending or threatened litigation, blah, 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 blah.
Go ahead, Stuart. I'm sorry.
Well, could that trust simply withhold the payment then, and if it hasn't made a distribution and it's not technically an asset of the proposed beneficiary, is that sufficient to shield it?
The short answer is yes. And let me tell you, that's not boilerplate, okay? You hardly ever see language like that. And that's why I was thinking it was the typical thing where it's just a divide and distribute immediately, that kind of thing, okay? Very unusual to see language like that, frankly, in a trust or in a will or anything else. See, there are two what I call tragedies of the trust. The first tragedy of the trust is that 90% of them aren't funded, meaning the assets aren't in the trust. So although you wanted to avoid probate, save taxes, and make it easy for the kids, you're not doing any of those things because now you got to probate the thing. Okay? That's the first tragedy. The second tragedy is what we're talking about right now. The second tragedy is you got stuff. You managed to hang on to it throughout your lifetime. You didn't pay it all over to the nursing home, and now it's going to the beneficiaries. But your beneficiaries are getting mugged. Now, maybe that's because they're murderers. I mean, I don't know what's going on, obviously, in your case. But sometimes it's divorce, and sometimes it's bankruptcy, and sometimes you co-signed a student loan or something else for one of the kids, okay, for the grandkids. And now in comes the money from mom and dad, but the beneficiary never sees it because it's gone to somebody else, okay? That's what called getting mugged. In comes the pillowcase of cash, you get it. Now you get mugged. There goes the pillowcase of cash. Are you with me on that?
Absolutely.
And that's what would typically happen in this situation, because you've got if it was the typical, if it was the, sort of the 90% of the way these things are done, the money just comes in. It's their money. There's no defense. You can't go to court at this point. Now, assuming let's say it didn't have that language in there. Let's say it did not. Let's say it was typical and did not have the language. Well, you're too late. I mean, there's a thing called fraudulent conveyance or fraudulent transfer in the law. And once you know of a liability out there, you can't transfer your money out somewhere else to avoid it. Fraudulent transfer is what they call it. And you're out of luck. But if you build into the trust the ability on the part of the trustee not to distribute money on certain conditions, you can do that all day long. Are you with me on this?
Yes, that's good to know.
So that's what I believe. That's what's going on. Is what sounds to me. That's what's going on here. Now, obviously, I say sounds like you'd have to read the trust. You'd have to see what's going on to make sure. And let me tell you, we take it in my practice. We take it the next step. You see, you've got three ways basically of distributing stuff to kids. The first way is typical, which is, mom and dad died, we paid all the bills, here's a pile of money, three kids, divide by three, scoop it in the pillowcase, hand over the pillowcase of cash. You know, you're passing over that pillowcase, it's 11:30 Friday night on South Division, but there it goes, okay? Typical situation. All these ladybird deeds, transfer on death. Pay on death accounts, joint tenant. They're just all different ways of saying pillowcase of cash. Are you with me on that?
Yes.
That's typical. The second way of doing it, it sounds like was done in this case, where you say, okay, well, here's your pillowcase of cash, but if there's marital, I'm just repeating what you said, there's marital discord, if there's liabilities out there, if you're getting sued, then I don't have to give you the pillowcase of cash. The trustee can hold on to it. That's unusual, and it's much better, obviously, than here's your pillowcase of cash. Go get mugged. Okay?
Yes.
Okay. Here's option number three. And if I can strong arm my clients into doing this, the families I work with into doing this, I do it. And that is, you set it up in trust. It doesn't go. There's never a pillowcase of cash going out there to the kids, right? I call it the safe deposit box. It goes out to the kids in a safe deposit box in trust. So in this situation that you're describing, rather than here's your money unless something's going on, which opens up the possibility for the court to interpret it, for the court to say that's against public policy, blah, blah, blah. There's another side of this that's going to have to be fought, okay, in the situation you're describing, in the number two situation, the give it unless. Okay, is that our music? Oh, that's a hard break, so hang on through the break, Stuart, if you would, please. You're listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. That's
some pretty great dads in this world, and one of them is mine. I know no dad is perfect, but he's pretty darn close a lot of the time.
Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, and this is the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and calls are free too. 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. The call is toll-free, and so are the answers, because we don't guarantee any of them. Hey, we got Stuart from Holland on the line. Stuart, let me see if I can recap what's going on here. We have a relative who passed. One of the beneficiaries of the relative is got some police trouble at this point. There may be restitution orders. There may be fines, other financial liability. And the concern is what happens to the inheritance. Because this money is in trust, you know, it gets kind of interesting. Usually, and I mean 90-plus percent of the time, kiss the money goodbye. But in this case, we've got a trust where the trustee is authorized, if there are certain triggering conditions, is authorized to hold on to the money, to hold the money back in trust for the benefit of the beneficiary, of the individual. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, you've got it spot on.
Okay. Now, my point is that there's three ways to distribute, three basic ways that people do it. The overwhelming majority of the time, it's pillowcase of cash. You know, auntie dies, here's your check. You know, pay the bills in the meantime, but then here's your check. And in that case, you got no hope. It's over and out. See you later. Pay the money over. Anything you would attempt to do at this point after being charged and all the rest, well, you got a, it's called fraudulent transfer, fraudulent conveyance. It's not going to work. It's not going to protect the money. The second thing that can be done, and you see it done every once in a while, and it's done in your case, it's not boilerplate, as a matter of fact, and that is where the trustee is authorized to hold on to the money for the beneficiary under these certain triggering conditions, which this probably would be. The problem with that is now we've got an argument. Did you make the triggering conditions? Is this against public policy? Blah, blah, blah. There are going to be some arguments available on the other side to saying that this money should still go to the victims or to whoever, but not necessarily. Okay, you've got arguments. The first case, you have no argument. You're over and out. See you later. Write the check. Here, you've got some ability. You do have some shots in your locker. You do have some ability to say no. This money should be held in trust for the benefit of the beneficiary of whoever this is, of the nephew, whatever, and we should not have to pay it over. That's not a slam dunk, but it's better than nothing, a lot better than nothing.
A couple more details.
Sure, please.
To help you.
Uh-huh.
If the criminal filings are in a state other than Michigan and the trust is set up in Michigan, does that provide some extra distance and robustness to the defense?
No, it's still going to be
handing the trust over.
No, it's still going to be Michigan law that governs the trust, and the fight would be made here in Michigan. Okay, the fight would be, you'd have the call it Texas court order or what have you, and they would have to come to Michigan because this is the situs of the trust. This is where the trust is being construed and everything else. It'd be a claim that would be made here, and it'd be Michigan law. It'd be Michigan law that applies. But you got to tell them. I mean, it's not like you can't, you know, you got to disclose.
I mean, but do they follow up that well? I mean, it's an amazing thing about these bureaucracies. When they've got you firmly in their grasp, sometimes they'll turn you upside down and shake out your last penny. But if you are two jurisdictions over and they're lazy and they don't care, sometimes you just never know what these guys are, what they do, you know?
No, you're absolutely right about that. There is no question about that. That's true, but that's an enforcement question. You know, that's a the legal question. Our lively legal discussion, which is what we're having here, not legal advice. Our lively legal discussion is about if everybody knew everything, what would the end result be? as opposed to, well, if they don't know certain things, what can we get away with? Are you with me on that? See, my thing is, my approach to any problem that we have or any situation that we have is, let's assume that everybody knows everything, okay? And if everybody knows everything, now maybe they don't, okay? And I'm not I believe in confidentiality and all the rest of that stuff, okay? I don't believe in showing my cards, but at the same time, if everybody knew everything, am I still okay? Do you see?
Right. It's a little bit like a Donald Rumsfeld situation. There are known unknowns and there are unknown unknowns.
Unknown unknowns, right. Right. And if I, to the extent that I can anticipate all of that, to the extent that I can say, okay, look, you know, see, when we do the Medicaid application, we do a lot of the Medicaid applications, okay? And sometimes people can't believe, oh, you can actually do that? You can actually do that? And the point is not that we can actually do that, which we can, you know, whatever it may happen to be. Sounds like you've got a little bit of experience with solely for the benefit of trust, right? There's things you can do, but you do it in the context of full disclosure. You go to the agency and say, look, I had this much. I've got this much now. I put this here and that there. Here's everything I did. Here are copies of the checks. Here's copy of the transfers. Here's copy of, you know, 5 years of records. Here's the whole shooting match. And see, I'm still entitled. I am entitled under the law. And that's my approach to these kinds of issues. Now, if they didn't know about this, if they didn't know about that, could they find out about this? Could they find out about that? You know, those are interesting questions. But nothing in my world, nothing turns on that. That has no consequence because I'm going to assume that everybody, I'm going to assume everything's on the front page of the Holland Sentinel, okay? And everybody knows. And I'm still okay, then I'm satisfied. That's just my approach to the thing. Now, we're coming up on the news break. I think we got maybe 20 seconds left, so go ahead.
You're talking about playing it smart, playing it safe, and winning in the long run, so I agree with you on that.
Yeah. Now there is one, and when we get back after the news, we're gonna another call. Gordon, hang on, we'll be with you. There is a third way. First way is pillowcase of cash. Second way is give them the pillowcase of cash unless there's a third way where we can be very proactive about it. And frankly, that's the way I advocate for the families we work with. Because you can eliminate any argument. You can make it very, very safe getting it to the kids. And it's not just criminal kids we're worried about. It's the student loans, co-signing, divorce, bankruptcy, short sale. You know, there's all kinds of stuff out there that you need to guard against, not just designated few. You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, inviting you to one of our free life plan workshops. Easy to get there, 888-463-2843.
I'm sure I heard his echo in my baby's newborn tears. I just wish I could have told him.
Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. You found the place where we talk about estate planning. And all you have to do is dial 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. And we'll get your question, comment, or concern on the air. Now, we were just dealing with a situation where we had someone who's receiving an inheritance. They've been charged with criminal conduct. Concern is what happens if what happens to the money if the person is convicted and, you know, now we have, what do we do with the money? And the answer is, the first answer, if it was done like most estate plans are done, you know, with these ladybird deeds and the pay on death accounts and all that, you just pay the money. Just pay the money. Okay, that's what you got. You just got to pay the money. Over and out. See you later. Bye-bye. And it's not just criminal behavior, you know what I mean? It's also, if you did a short sale on a home, well, yeah, they let you sell the house, but you still owe the money. Do you see? And if you co-signed a kid's student loan, now you owe the money. And, you know, if you were in a car accident or got credit card debt or got divorced, all these things. if the money comes in, the money goes out. That's the way it's usually done. That's what happens with pay on death and all the rest. Now, what some people do, and it sounded like this is what was up with Ted, with the caller, is that the trust has a provision, a clawback provision, which says, oh, well, wait a second. Yeah, it's your money unless these triggering events occur or something like that, which is better than nothing, much better than nothing. At least you have an argument, okay? And you see those once in a while. Now, the way, and I've started talking about this a couple of times, but the way that we do it is, or strongly suggest that we do it, is rather than give the kid a pillowcase of cash, rather than give your beneficiaries the check, the outright distribution, well, we've always done the clawback, okay, which was unusual enough. But what we're doing now, and been doing this for a few years now, is rather than give the money to the kid, here's the money, unless, what we do is we say, here's the money in trust, okay? So for each, get this, you've got your own, now this doesn't happen till after you've died. So you've got to, everybody's got to be, you know, the parents both have to be dead, you know, you both died. And then we're talking about just how do we get it to the kids, which for me, believe me, is way down on the scale. I mean, give it to the zoo if you want to, I have no problem with that. But if we are going to get it to the kids, if we, you know, if that's what you want to do, right, then let's give it to the kids in a way where the kids actually get it. Now, how unusual is it that, you know, your kid's going to be criminal and all the rest of that? Oh, unusual. But what if, you know, the cosign the student loan, divorce, bankruptcy, lawsuit, car accident, there's a million, credit card debt, there's a million ways for kids to get mugged beyond, you know, the criminal involvement, okay? This happens to people. And so what we do is we say, look, let's give them the money in a trust that the kid controls, okay? So when the money comes out of, you've died, right? We paid all the bills, all is all taken care of, and now we're giving it to the kid, but the kid gets it in trust. The kid is the trustee of the trust. The kid has the ability to empty the trust if they want to, and there's a co-trustee involved and all that. There's too detailed. It gets kind of crazy when you have to write it. I just show it to you. But the point is, and very important, when you're leaving the money to the kid, don't just give it to him. You know, if go through your plan. This is one of my top five mistakes that attorneys make, that lawyers make in estate planning, is they just give the money to the kid with no protection whatsoever. Every once in a while, you'll get something where it says, got the clawback thing. But why not leave it to the kid in trust? Give the kid the option of, you know, go crazy with it if you want to. But if you leave it to them in a particular way, in trust, then no one can take it away. It's the difference between giving them a pillowcase of cash, giving them a key to a safe deposit box. You know, you give the kid the pillowcase of cash, they get mugged, boom, there goes the money. You give them the key, they get mugged, and, well, who wants that key? You know, they can't even use the key. The kid goes to the bank, gets another one. Are you with me on that? So, just to wrap up on that previous call, we've got Gordon from Grand Rapids on the line. Gordon has been the Saint Sebastian of today's show, just hanging in there to the last. We appreciate it, Gordon. How can I help?
Well, thanks for taking the call.
Not a problem.
My sister and I received an inheritance from my uncle back in 2002, and it was a certificate that had a 10-year maturity rate on it. Last year, the company that held the certificate filed bankruptcy. And
Gordon, could I ask, was it like a zero coupon bond where there's no payments, but at the end of 10 years you get all your money all at once? Was
correct.
It that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There was no. My uncle put the initial investment into it. It was returning a 7% rate of interest. And my understanding, it was mostly invested in real estate, and through the real estate crash, I think they ran into their trouble.
Sure.
We've gotten notice of a Chapter 11 bankruptcy for that certificate. We have the agent that was representing our uncle that wrote the presented the certificate, who we've been in conversation with. Has said that there's not much that you know, we don't really need to do anything. We just have to wait for the process to go through. The notice we have says there's a filing deadline for creditors to make claim. And I guess we're just looking for some advice, which do we follow the representative that we believe is a good person, but I don't know if that's right advice or not.
Yeah, well, you're not a when they're asking for creditors, what they're talking about are the suppliers and folks like that.
Okay.
You're a creditor, but you're a bondholder. I don't really know. I mean, is it a bond? Is it a limited partnership interest? I mean, does it say promissory note on it or something like that?
It's called a certificate. Certificate series, certificate number. When we have filed our taxes with it, we've gotten an annual statement each year with the interest that it was accruing. We stopped receiving that certificate in the last 3 years.
Did you declare that as income?
We declared it as income, and that the tax people that we worked with kind of said it was kind of a complicated description of, you know, what were you account for it on the tax return. So they just advised us to count it as, you know, interest income.
But that's a whole other issue. But did you get? Do you remember the form that you got? Was it a 1099 or was it a K-1? Does K-1 sound familiar?
K-1 doesn't sound familiar. Let me see.
See, because if you didn't get them, you're a cash basis taxpayer, aren't you? I mean,
correct.
Yeah. Well, you're just accruing this interest. I don't understand why they would. I don't quite understand why they would tax it to you, because you can't withdraw it. You don't have control over it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, by its terms, you don't get it until the end of the investment.
Yeah, I can't answer that question.
Okay.
Yeah, I have not received any money off of it.
Right, right. That's my point. You see, if it's a K-1, if you're getting a K-1, right, well, then that's like a partnership return, you know, because people would buy these things. You know, they finance this sort of thing all kinds of different ways. One of them would be as you loan them the money, zero coupon, you get it back at the end of the 10 years. Or, and it kind of sounds like that's what you've got. But if you got a K-1, your uncle could have bought a limited partnership interest, in which case a certain amount of income would be allocated to his partnership account. Okay, then I can see you accounting for that on a current basis. That kind of makes sense. But then if you have a bond, is it just a general obligation bond? Is it secured by particular assets? Is it possible that you're a secured creditor? I don't know. You know, you have to look at the underlying investment. I understand that you're getting a statement that says stuff on it, but you'd really have to look at what the underlying agreement would say. I don't believe you're a creditor who needs to file, because you've got your bond. You've got your, you know, assuming it's a bond.
Okay.
Then you're a bondholder. You're in that class, and you're not an unknown creditor that has to come forward. You're just an owner of a bond. So I would agree with your investment advisor on that.
Okay. All right. That was the biggest question that I had. I didn't want to pass on filing and missing out on any kind of settlement that might come out of it.
Right. But, you know, you're going to be tailing Charlie. You know what I mean? I mean, if you get cents on the dollar.
Yeah.
It really is curious to me, though. I'm not really understanding why they're having you do the... Oh, I'm getting the break sign here. And if I don't want to get caught off in mid-sentence, I got to get out of here. Thanks for calling, Gordon. I appreciate it. You're listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. This is David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, and you have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. This is the show where the bumper music is better than the rest of the stuff that happens. Anyway, if you'd like to come to one of our free life plan workshops, I do have to let you know that we have added a few more. I know that some people get a little frustrated because we were, you know, couldn't get you in. We were booking so far out. So we did add a couple more, a little more capacity there. So if you would like to come to a life plan workshop and got a little discouraged the last time you called in, you can call this number, 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843, and we'll find a place for you now. Of course, you can always go to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com. That's davidcarrierlaw.com. You can sign up right on the website. You don't even have to email us or anything like that. You can just sign up right on the website. And the schedule, the upcoming workshops are right there on the website. So we'd love to see you at a life plan workshop. It's the, you know, when folks want to do plan, you know, it gets to sort of what we were talking about a little bit earlier with one of our callers. You know, this process, this whole planning thing, right? It's not a one size fits all. It's not see that on TV, 20 minutes or less. You know, we'll get it all done for you. Well, you know, those guys who do the 20 minutes or less, those guys, just all I have to say is they must be brilliant. Because I can't do it in 20 minutes. I can't even get through the workshop in less than 2 hours. And I think that's the way it goes. You know, we do the workshop. It's a two-hour workshop. And we tell you some of the secrets. You know, there are real ways that this stuff, in my opinion, and it's just my opinion, but it's right. It's my opinion, but it's correct. So there you are. Anyway, there's ways to approach these issues, and it's not a one size fits all. You know, we had an earlier caller who was saying, "Well, should I take the money out of my 401k and pay off my mortgage with it? Now that I don't have to pay, or in the near future, I won't have to pay the 10% early withdrawal penalty, 59.5. I don't have to pay the penalty. Should I just take the money out and pay off my mortgage?" And you know, the answer to that question is, I don't think so. You know, in general, no, that's not a good. But it's not a total. You know, that's not the end of the inquiry. That's the start. I don't think so. Let's look at what else is going on in your life. Let's look at what other things are important to you. You know, balance it all out. Let's get a few more facts so that when we make a decision, it's not based on, well, everybody told me. I'm not really sure why they told me, but everybody says so. So I guess I shouldn't do it this way or should do it that way. And it's the same way with this planning stuff. People do, they told me at the, I get this a lot. They told me at the bank to put my niece on it. They told me at the bank to put my kids on the account so someone would always be able to sign for me. You know, you get all this, everybody told me to do this kinds of things. And there's very little thought, very little consideration that goes into an awful lot of what happens. An awful lot of what families do is not based on what's best for that family or best for that individual. And I had just a sideline. I'm getting pushback from the single folks we work for. From my single people saying, "Well, you're always talking about families. You're always talking about married couples. And what about a single?" Well, look, a lot the same principles apply. Okay, and there are different things we do for married couple versus single people, but there's lots of stuff we still do for single folks. Lots of stuff. And the reason we do the workshop, which is no charge and come on down and all that, and the reason we do that is because we need to establish a baseline, you know, sort of a frame of reference, a way that we can all talk together. And one of the first things we do in the workshop is just say, why are you here? Because each workshop really, really is different. I mean, the structure is the same. I'm not saying it's completely different. But, you know, which ornaments do we hang on the tree? Well, it depends on who's at the workshop and what it is you're particularly interested in. So we can tailor the workshop to get those questions answered so that, not to solve the issue, you understand me? The workshop is not a place where you say, oh, well, here's the answer to all my questions. No, that is not the purpose of the workshop. The purpose of the workshop is to identify, to have you identify some of the issues and to say, look, this is the way the world really works. You know, one of my, we have a, it's unusual for us to have a workshop where we don't have one or two clients who already did work with us come back to the workshop and see what's, you know, what's going on, what's new. And one of my clients, this was a couple weeks ago, he had a great question. He said, look, you're telling us all this stuff, right? But I don't know if I go down this path or that path. I don't know which one of these examples you're giving. I don't know which one of these is what's going to affect us. And, you know, it kind of made me stop in my tracks a little bit and think, well, yeah, but, you know, that's not what we're doing here, okay? The point of the workshop is not to give you solutions. The point of the workshop is not to give you answers. My job is not to give you answers, you know. My job is to be a compass, a map, okay? Where do you want to go on the map? I don't know. I bet you, though, I bet you where you're going is not where you ought to be. I bet you if you knew where you were going, you know, in the conversation, I bet you'd say, hey, wait a second, I didn't want to go that way. Maybe I want to go this way. Do you see? That's the purpose of the workshop, is just to say, okay, where are we at? What does the world really look like? What are the laws that apply in general? And to give you some idea of what the options are. It's not to solve the problems. It's to get the conversation started. And that's why whenever someone calls the office, whenever family calls and says, hey, we'd like to, you know, we want to do a trust. We want to do this. We want to do that. The answer is always come to a workshop first. It doesn't cost you anything. You know, we bake the cookies, you know, 20 minutes before you show up. They're oatmeal raisin, but, you know, if you don't like oatmeal raisin, I guess you got to bring your own snacks. But, you know, but that's the point of the workshop, is just to get the conversation started. So we have sort of a common frame of reference. All righty. So I'd love to see you at a life plan workshop. It's a great, you know, even if you've already got your plan done, which is wonderful, great. Come on down and learn a little bit more about how that might actually work. You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, wishing everybody a happy Father's Day.
You've been listening to The David Carrier Show, a lively discussion addressing your questions and concerns, but not legal advice. There is a big difference. So when making decisions that affect your family, your property, or yourself, the best advice is to seek good advice, specific to your unique needs. If you missed any of today's show or would like additional information about the law offices of David Carrier, please visit davidcarrierlaw.com.